Welcome to the Man in the Pew Show, brought to you by maninthepew.com. This is the show for men and by men who want to follow Jesus every day, at work, at home, at church, and at play. Now here's this week's episode. Well, welcome. This is Phil Mershon, and I am your host. I am really excited for today's show with Angus Nelson. I'll tell you more about him a little bit later on. But first, a couple of reminders. If you want to reach me, phil@maninthepew.com is directly to me in email. You can email me prayer requests, suggestions about future guests. And I also would encourage you to share the show notes from today. This is episode 44, maninthepew.com/044. And then finally, if you would, come join us on Facebook. We have a new fellowship there. Look up Man in the Pew Fellowship. It's a private group. You can come join, and we are praying for each other every Wednesday morning, and we try to encourage each other in our faith as we are all digital nomads working in this digital world as well as the physical world. So one of the verses that Angus talks about is Psalm 139, verse 14. And I wanted to think about this for just a minute before we get started. It says, "I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well." I know many of us struggle at times wondering if we have anything unique to offer. As John Eldridge says it, we wonder if we're really men, if we have what it takes when it counts. And the corollary is, do I have something unique to offer the world? Well, let me tell you this. Just like there are no two snowflakes that are alike, you are different from every person who's ever been made. You have a unique voice. Your hair is different. If you have hair like me, you don't have hair. Your eyes, your height, your skin, your personality, your gifts, your past, your present, your mind, your experiences, your passions, your skills, your sense of humor, the list goes on. You have been uniquely made. You've been a unique history and a unique fingerprint. And there's no one that can make the contribution to the world like you can. Yes, you're made in the image of God, so like in that respect, we're all the same. But get this, God's infinite. So there are infinite ways that we can be like God himself, and he has expressed that in the way that he made us. It's been said that he threw out the mold after he made us, and I think there's a literal sense that that's true. Now, it's possible you haven't discovered what your uniqueness is. The ways that God has wired you and made you uniquely, and you might need to spend some time checking that out. My friend Bill Hendricks, who's been on this show, has a book called The Person Called You, and it's an exploration of your uniqueness in light of how God has wired you with different passions and abilities and skills, and that sets you up for a contribution that only you can make to this world. So I encourage you to discover that and bring that to us. We need you to do that. I need you to do that. Please let your light shine. All right, I'm going to turn it over now to this week's episode with Angus Nelson. Please enjoy. I'm very excited today to be with my new friend, Angus Nelson. He is a partner with Life of Dad. He's also a speaker that helps creative entrepreneurs turn their expensive hobbies into businesses. Welcome to the show, Angus.
Thanks, Phil. Great to be here.
Awesome. So we always start with your baseball card stats. No, we're not talking about your athletic career, but your family career. So tell us about your wife, your kids, and where you live.
Sure. So if it's my baseball card, I'm probably batting .500 since I had a practice marriage. Isn't that how those stats work? And we'll get into that more later into the story. I am married, been married for 10 years. To my Hawaiian honey. We met in Huntsville, Alabama back in 2005, got married in 2007. We've had two kids since then, and I was blessed to inherit a daughter in the marriage. So she's 22, and then our next two kids are 8 and then 7. So the five of us live in Nashville, Tennessee.
Fantastic. So where did you go to school, by the way?
I actually went to Bible college. I went to Rhema Bible Training Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and got my degree in youth ministry.
Oh, that's right. So we'll get into some of your background with youth ministry. I know that was part of your story. So let's talk about when faith became real for you, whether it's your conversion story or another point along the way where God got a hold of your heart and you decided you needed to make him the center of everything.
Sure. So I like to say that I had two phases in my conversion. One was discovering Jesus. The second was discovering grace. And so I learned about Jesus when I was in high school. I was about 14 or 15 years old, and my parents had become Christians. And it was really strange because we didn't really go to church when I was growing up, except but for, you know, some holidays just to kind of go through the ritual. And then my parents got involved with faith because some painters were working on our house. And we keep talking to them about, you know, this savior and this faith and this lifestyle. And, you know, that was, again, something that was kind of unfamiliar to us. And I grew up having a dad who was really kind of hard on us. We played a lot of sports, and my parents were really competitive. We were competitive as a family. And so my parents were those parents in the stands, you know, the ones that raise their voice really loud and criticize everyone and everything, and especially the referees. And it didn't matter how we did, how, you know, the scoreboard ended up. Even if we won, I would come off the ice and my parents would, you know, find something to pick apart, something we didn't do right, something we didn't do, you know, the way we're supposed to. After they had this, you know, conversion to faith, I can remember coming off the ice one night after a game. I was in high school and my dad put his arm around me and said, "Hey, you did a great job out there. You really gave it your all. I'm proud of you." And I was like, "Who is this man? Like, who are you?" It was just completely baffling. And then watching the transformation of their lives was what really kind of solidified for me that, hey, maybe I want to check this out too. So I became a Christian when I was 16. And then I like to say I started living it when I was 17 because I was still trying to figure out, you know, what it meant to be a Christian. And so my whole senior year, both my brother and I have an identical twin brother. We pretty much lived our faith out really loud. And in our small town in Wisconsin, that wasn't done very often. Side story, later on, it's interesting how many of my high school friends, once they became believers, you know, would reach out to us and say, "Hey, you'll never guess what happened." And so they always knew us for that. Flash forward a number of years later, I'm about 30, 31 years old. I'm running a business. It was a nonprofit organization. We were helping young adults, like I said before, with my college degree in youth ministry. I wanted to help young people, but I didn't necessarily wanted to do it under a church context. I believe that we could create faith conversations just in being ourselves, and that it didn't matter what title you gave it, but it mattered in the spirit that you brought, you know, that you surrounded yourself with. And I had started this nonprofit with my brother. We had a lot of concerts. We fronted the organization as a coffee house, and all the Christians in our community wanted it to be a Christian coffee shop. They kept saying, "Oh, it's a Christian coffee house." And I was like, no, it's not a Christian coffee house. It's just a coffee house. And we put on a lot of concerts. And some of our concerts have Christian artists and some of them don't. But we believed anyone would talk about life over a cup of coffee. And that's where our real ministry was at. It was just talking with kids until, you know, 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. And that was where the real ministry was. But we didn't feel like we had to make it something that it didn't need to be. Well, all the Christians, you know, kind of ridiculed us and said, "Well, if you don't confess Jesus before man, he can't confess you before the Father." And then we had others who weren't believers were wondering why all these Christians were in such a huff. And then they just assumed we were some kind of cult. So it was really hard to raise funds for this nonprofit organization because of this, you know, underlying chaos. And I made some bad business decisions. We started to get financially underwater. And so I did what most of us do when things get hard is we work harder. And so I had in my head this voice that said I had to prove to everyone around that we could make this thing work. This people of the city, the government, the other nonprofits, my parents, and even my wife. Like I had to prove to all these people that I could make this work. So I was working 60, 70, 80-hour work weeks. And the stress and the strain it started to wear me down. Meanwhile, I'm leading worship for my dad's church. He had become a pastor later in life. And in addition, I was running the youth group. But out of my pain in all of the pressure, I started coping with pornography and then to alcohol and then from that into adultery. And I ended up sabotaging everything in my life. I lost my marriage. I lost the nonprofit. Of course, my dad had to ask me to step down from my role at the church. It was terribly humiliating. I was full of shame and I felt like an absolute failure. And how in the world am I ever going to get out of this hole? And over the next 3 years, I just became a recluse, a person who was normally very gregarious and they're normally very fun and the life of the party. And I never wanted to leave my house except but to go out and drink and sing karaoke. And that was my life for those 3 years, except for the fact that at the same time, I also knew something in my heart that while I feel that God had rejected me and that I had failed him so much that he couldn't love me and use me again, I knew that I'd seen and witnessed him work in other people's lives, and I had hoped maybe, just maybe, he might once again work in mine. So every now and then I would like crack open a book or I would watch a video, and then I finally started buying CDs. Remember what CDs were? You remember those?
Oh, yeah.
I started getting up early in the morning because I couldn't sleep. I was depressed. Obviously, the divorce and everything, I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping. And I started listening to different teachers and preachers and everything, you know, from the gamut, from these TV evangelists to, you know, the Tony Robbins of the world. And I suddenly woke up underneath my Christmas tree, 2003. And my family had gone out of town to be with my brothers. I was utterly alone. There was nobody there to celebrate Christmas with. And I was suicidal. I was bawling, crying, weeping underneath this Christmas tree. And God kind of spoke to me and said, I'm not done with you yet. And I said, I don't even know what that means. And over the next series of 2 years, I started discovering this thing called grace. It's kind of like that saying that says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And these different ministers would come into my life, or different books I would stumble upon that talked about this thing called grace. And there was this one teacher who had a book who was called Becoming the Person You Want to Be. And the whole premise of the book is we are so busy trying to become something that God inherently already made us to be. We are loved, we are beautiful, we are creative, we are wonderfully and beautifully made. Like all these things that I sought external things to validate, God had already done inside me. And I was just confounded with that. And it opened my eyes to say, you know, what is it all about? Like, and I read another book by the same author and then another book by the same author. And they said, that's it. I put my house in the market and I moved to Huntsville, Alabama, where this guy had a small church and he had this small Bible school program with about, I don't know, a dozen and a half students. And started teaching all about grace. And I decided I would sit under this guy for a year. And he taught me stuff that just blew my mind because I was really good at religion. I was really amazing at legalism. But what I didn't know was grace. And so that's why I said I had these two steps of discovering Jesus, but that was a long way from discovering grace. And that's what changed my life.
Yeah, and I think ultimately until we come to that place where we experience the grace of Jesus, not just the person and the ticket to heaven, that's when the transformation really begins to happen. And it, you know, it happens so often for us, I believe, that we walk into faith by grace, but then we try to work out our faith by the law, and we get trapped into a legalism. And so that legalism, when you experience the level of sin and distance that you did, is going to lead you to the pit of despair where you think, God is going to reject me. I mean, give words to some of what you were feeling in that pit, if you can remember. I know that feels like you're talking to a stranger now because you've been changed so much. But what kinds of thoughts were in your brain about how you perceived God and how you thought God looked at you?
Yeah, I... I do know that man is a stranger, but I also know that man, like I've actually prayed to God, don't let me ever forget those feelings. For two reasons. One is, I want to always be able to identify with people in their struggle. And two, I always want to, rest in the gratitude because I know the feelings of what was, and I know the feelings of what is, and I automatically create the contrast of what's truth. When I was in that time, I carried so much shame because I was well known in the community, because I was the pastor's kid, because I had done good things, and now all of a sudden I'm a hypocrite. What do people think about me? Who knows what? I didn't want to go out because I was paranoid that people knew all my dirty little secrets, that people were talking about me. In fact, one day that actually happened. I was walking down the street and this one kid was talking to some other friends of his, and they were talking about me and how I crashed and burned this organization. And I wonder what he's going to try and do now and bury it in the ground. And I was like, so humiliated. And what I found out later, which is, I just think that was just a tool of the enemy. I thought everybody talked like that about me. And I came to find out later that nobody gives a rip about you as much as you think they do. And nobody cares as much about your story as much as you think they do. And so for me, going through that pain of shame, isolation, fear, like those are very, very real emotions. And the way I got out of those, you know, I mentioned, you know, listening to these different, you know, teachers and then reading these books, but I also started going to counseling. And I always thought that anyone that goes to see a counselor, man, they are jacked up. They are just crazy. Like they have just really have, you know, gone off the deep end. And what I realized is all of us are like that. All of us are jacked up. And we don't realize it because in our isolation, we think everything's normal. And we think everybody does the things they do for the same reasons that I do the things that I do. And it's very crazy. It's narcissistic, and it's this chaos we've created in our minds and called it normal and called it reality, and it's just not. And when I would sit down with my counselor and I'd tell him these things are going through my head, he would echo those back to me like a parrot, you know, and say, well, when you said this, is this what you mean? And then as I heard his words, I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds ridiculous. That's not even true. And he said, but that's what you've believed to be true. And it caused me to change how I was perceiving myself. And one of the first books that started all of this was a book by John Eldridge called Wild at Heart. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the three things that every man struggles for, and that is a princess to win, a battle to fight, and a journey to conquer, or something along those lines. I may have jacked that up, but something along those lines. And I agreed with all that. But what the one thing in that book that started all of this down the path was the question that John Eldridge said every man wrestles with. And that is this: do I have what it takes? Mm-hmm. So here I was in this absolute effort and striving and performance base for my faith when I just knew legalism. Now all of a sudden that's been done away. Like all those false, house of cards have fallen to the ground. It was as if like little bits and pieces of foundational truths were starting to be laid. That we live in this paradox that God's love is never ending. It's unconditional, and he is unrelenting in his pursuit to love us. The paradox is, will you let him? Because he can love you all he wants. He can shower you with love, but if you never receive it, you'll never connect to its power. You'll talk about it. You'll think you know it, but you'll never actually activate that love in your life. And when I started to get to that place of realizing that grace was the ability to do that which I could not do in of myself, that God had this desire to do the exceedingly abundantly above all I can ask, think, dream, or dare imagine, that he wanted to do in me things that would confound kings and kingdoms, that he knew every hair on the top of my head, that he made me fearfully and wonderfully made, as I referred to before. When I started to understand the beauty and capacity and massive favor that God had in my life, I started to operate from a different mindset, to where I went from just a Bible school degree, working in nonprofit, to elevating, to starting to work with corporate and some of the biggest influencers in the globe. Like, how in the world did that happen? And I completely underscore, with the grace of God, put me in a place where my own humility, my quiet confidence, and my disinterest in my ego and trying to build my own brand and name, that people accepted me and saw me as authentic and real and trustworthy. And people share things with me they otherwise wouldn't share. They say things to me they would never tell anyone else. I know some things about some people their wives don't even know about them. And I believe it's because they've gotten around me and they got a taste of something beyond just me. And I think it's the favor of God. And so I walk my life and I'm learning more and more to yield to his nature, to watch the manifestation of him doing that, which I can't take credit for, where I stand back and said, only you, God. And God does say that exceedingly abundantly above all we can ask, think, dream, or dare imagine, as I said before. It's a reality. And the challenge is, will you let him?
I think that's a big encouragement to all of us. And, you know, I think we, as men in particular, get into a mode of thinking it's all about the work that we need to do. And so it's not comfortable to open ourselves up to receive the way that you were essentially forced to come to that point of, will I receive this or not? Because you didn't see another path, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. If you had the chance, Angus, to go back and talk to yourself on that Christmas day when you're at the deepest, you know, part of the pit, because I know there are guys who are part of this community who know someone who's in that dark place, or are maybe personally there right now, or they're feeling hopeless, wondering, have I wrecked things so badly? Have I ruined my marriage? Have I, you know, I can't provide for my family because I just can't put enough food on the table, can't hold down a job. Or it might be something not as severe as that. I know that sounds very severe, but if you were speaking to yourself or someone in those circumstances, what would you say today that might be helpful?
Man, I wish I could give you words and say, oh, it's awesome. But the reality is, those emotions that come with those circumstances you just spelled out are super real. Mm-hmm. And when I was in that place, the one thing that I think I'm reminded of, because I've had other opportunities to be in challenging situations as well, the one thing that keeps me afloat is the realization that if I have a wife that loves me and believes in me, and I have kids that will crawl on my lap and call me daddy, that's enough. All this other stuff, money will come, money will go. We don't recognize the fact that, especially here in our westernized American mindsets, that what we have is so abundant and so plentiful that if we were to live in something less than what we currently have, we think that we've stepped down. And that's just a lie. Getting a smaller house, downsizing, getting a cheaper car, like, that stuff is just smart. We make life more complicated for ourselves, and we make more money, so we buy bigger toys. We make more money, we buy bigger houses. We make more money, we get, you know, ourselves in more debt because we're idiots. We have bought into a lie. So simplifying actually makes your life better. And this is the question that I would have you, you know, tattoo on your wrist, or what I did all throughout this, and I still do it to this day. I have dry erase markers in my bathroom, And I write on my mirror, because the nuggets, the scripture, the affirmations that I put on that mirror, I want to be the first things I see when I wake up in the morning, the last things I see when I go to bed. The thing that I would encourage you to write is, what does this make possible? When I was underneath that Christmas tree, I thought that I had nothing. And what I didn't realize, knowing what I know now about life, is that life is not static, it's dynamic. And I had resources, like I had a job and I was making money. Even though I was alone, that didn't mean anything. It didn't disqualify me or devalue me as a human being. It just was a matter of circumstances. It wasn't personal. It wasn't anything that I had labeled and given story to. It just is. In the same facet, people are going to treat you in ways that sometimes and most times have nothing to do with you. People will treat you and speak to you in ways that are conducting arguments and conversation with themselves. They're operating out of their own lack, their own self-worth, their own challenges, and they take it out on you, even in marriages. And what does this make possible? When I was under that Christmas tree, gosh, if I had to do it all over again, knowing what I know now, I would have sold my house and I would have grabbed a plane ticket and I would have gone and seen the world. I would have had an adventure and said, well, I don't know what to do now, so I'm going to go enjoy life and serve other people until I can figure out what my next step is. Instead, I spent 3 years self-loathing. I think every situation, if you lose your job, what does this make possible? If you lose a relationship with someone, what does this make possible? If you lose a position on your bowling league, what does this make possible? Fill in the blank. I have more time to do things that are of more value. I have time to serve other people. I have time to adventure and take a trip. I have time to love my kids more right now. I have time to spark up my marriage with new passion and drive. Anytime some challenge comes to you, you have to ask, what does this make possible? The second component to this is, understand that every fear you face is an invitation to another echelon of being. We think that when we face a fear, that we are incapacitated of anything good or healthy or positive. And the reality is, that fear is a double dog dare saying, will you gut out what you need in this moment to change the thing you've never wanted to change to become the person you've always wanted to become? And therein lies the paradox. The very thing you want is the very thing that you disqualify yourself from. And when you face a challenge, it only exemplifies the pain trying to force you into a decision to move you forward into a place of strength instead of a place of weakness. When you go through bankruptcy, it is not a place of, oh, you are a terrible human being and you don't know how to handle money and you have failed as a man, you failed as a husband and a father. No, what it means is you made some really crummy mistakes and it's junky. But now you get to start fresh and anew. How are you going to do it different? A. B, you've now seen what it's like to be in financial crisis. And guess what? You live to tell about it. You don't have to be scared of it anymore. That's a good Southern phrase, a scared of. You don't have to be scared of it anymore. Fear no longer has power over you in finances, because you know what? You can live through it. It's no longer a piece of your self-worth. And then the last thing I would say is, when you recognize that fear is an invitation to another echelon, you will suddenly quest to eradicate fear in your life. You'll do it through relationships. You'll do it through starting businesses. You'll do it through emotions, saying things to your wife or your kids you were always afraid of saying, telling your best friend, your buddy, how you really feel about it and say, man, I really appreciate it, dude. You don't realize that sometimes the words you speak are the very things I need. And bro, I just love having you in my life. Like, dudes, we don't say that to each other.
No, we don't.
We don't go to somebody and say, hey, look, I don't care if it's 2 a.m, if it's 4 a.m, if you need help, dude, I want you to pick up that phone and I want you to call me. And I will meet you wherever you need to meet me. Like, as guys, until you get to a place where compassion and empathy is liberated through your pain, you'll never experience what life is truly about. And the fears and challenges we face are not to tear us down, but to build us up. That's the paradox. The Bible says that if you want to live, you first have to die. If you want to gain, you first have to lose. If you want friends, you first have to show yourself friendly. Like, all of life is based in paradox. Why should it be any different when you face crisis? We think crisis is to tear us down and destroy us, but crisis is to build us up and show us that God is able, to show that we are able, to show that Christ in us, the hope of glory. That's a crazy phrase. There's a scripture that says that the mystery of the gospel is this: Christ in you, the hope of glory. That glory is the word doxa. Many interpret that as doxa being like grace. It's unmerited favor, right? But there's another interpretation of that word doxa, which is same as. In other words, Christ in you, the hope of God's will, God's intention, God's sight of your life. It's the same as. That's the glory. Christ in you, the hope of glory. So what if the mystery of the gospel is you are like Christ? What if the mystery of the gospel is that everything that God is everything that you are? Everything you seek, you already possess. How would that change your life? And what would that make possible? What if I could actually be happy? What if I could actually be content? What if I could actually be satisfied? And instead of spending my days worried about the past or the future, I would just be tickled pink about today. And today being an acronym, the only day actually yours. Gosh, I could actually look my wife in the eye in a conversation and not have to look at my phone or think about work. Like, I can just be present. I could play with my kids and get out a football or a soccer ball or some kind of game board or cards, and we could connect. Holy cow, man. Most of us, we spend our lives just spinning our wheels in that forward or backward state. In the past, we're looking at something really awesome or really negative. Like, if it's awesome, it's like the good old days. You remember when it was like this? Oh, man, that was amazing. If it could only get back to that again. Or in the negative, it's like, well, this happened to me. This was painful. I'll never become X, Y, or Z. I don't deserve to be X, Y, or Z because of that. The way my wife treated me, my spouse treated me, the divorce I went through, the choices I made, the way I inflicted pain on someone else, or maybe the way that pain was inflicted on me, or worse, the pain I inflicted in my own life, self-sabotage, blah, blah, blah. Like, we spend our time sweeping a floor just thinking about the past. Or the opposite is, we get on the hamster wheel chasing after the future. I'll be happy when I get this house, when I get this size of office, or I get that corner view, if I get that car, if I get that spouse. Like, we think we get this, but that doesn't satisfy, so then we need that, and then we need this, and then we need that, and then we need this, and we need that. We're running on the hamster wheel, exhausting ourselves, chasing after the quote-unquote dream. Both of those are incredibly incapacitating. So when you learn to just live in today, what does this make possible? All of a sudden, you can start building momentum off of victories you can win today. And those will carry into tomorrow, and then the next day, and the next day. Because as you're present today, you find that you become happy, content, you start operating out of a place of generosity instead of lack. You start operating in a place that wants to help others, give to others, be a part of others. You start to become more collaborative, and everybody likes to hang around happy people. So that brings promotion, opportunity, and you start to get elevated in things in your life. Your spouse wants to spend more time with you. Your kids want to be around you. Your coworkers are trying to give you other opportunities and bring you in on their deals and their meetings. Like, we have this so wrong. And it all starts with understanding that the paradox therein lies is that the performance you are seeking is not your performance, but it's what Christ has already done. And the challenge to you is to simply receive it.
Bro, I'm loving listening to your passion and story, and I've not wanted to interrupt you because there's just so much truth in there. You're reminding me of a conversation I had this morning with a good friend. And this week for me has been not as desperate as the week that you described, but it was definitely one of those weeks where I needed to hear Scott Beebe, who's a common friend of ours, tell me, Phil, all you need to do is get up and move the ball to the next first down. You don't have to try to win the game today. Just get up from, because I fell down, you know, I did, you know, I was having a hard week. Health-wise, and was just having a hard week and was feeling a little bit hopeless a couple mornings this week. And he said, just get up and start moving the ball. You just need to do one thing. And what I'm hearing in your story is there's a lot of things that I'm hearing. One is that encouragement that to get out of the cycle means you've got to start changing the ways that you believe. And it starts today. It's not about thinking about this future day when things are going to be different. It's today. It's right now. It's in this moment. Am I going to be present with you? Am I going to focus on what's possible right now in this exchange, in the exchange that I'm having with my wife in an hour, that I'm having with my daughter in 3 or 4 hours, as I go to play in a musical tonight, as I get up tomorrow and have a day off? How am I going to use that time? It's that is what I'm hearing. Is part of your story, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of like, gosh, I was just writing about somebody whose kid had open heart surgery, and this is what it makes me think of it is, you know, that's really what it is we all need open heart surgery. And we have to rewire that stuff that's inside of us. You know, if I were to like encapsulate it, it would be like, you know, getting committed to personal growth. What you're taking in is a big component of what you're giving out. Like my story, when I started listening to different teachers and I started, you know, taking in, like today I was on a walk and I was listening to a guy named Brendon Burchard. Mm-hmm. That guy rocks my world. Last week I went to an event with Brene Brown. Mm. I expose myself to people who are smarter than me, who are more successful than me. I want to be the dumbest and least successful person in any room I walk into. Like, I want to constantly be challenged because I'm no longer threatened being in those situations because it doesn't affect my self-worth. If anything, I'm leaning in because I want to grow. So I'm committed to being, you know, a lifelong learner. You know, I take responsibility for myself and my actions now and my circumstances because of what I've learned and what I've gone through. I don't blame other people. I don't take on a victim mentality. I am a victor and a conqueror in this thing called life. That's what Jesus called me to do. So I'm going to quit licking my wounds and blaming everybody else for my dissatisfaction, instead saying, what does this make possible? I'm really selective on, like I said, the things that I'm listening to. It's not just those good teachers, but also like the things I watch on TV. I'm not a legalist, right? I'm not going to tell you don't watch this because it has a couple of cuss words. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, don't just watch stuff that's going to expose you to a lot of boobies if you have issues with, you know, sexy stuff. That was me, right? So I don't need to be around boobies. I don't need to read books that just are superfluous and stuff. Like, I'm really intentional to guard my heart and the things that influence me, both from an entertainment value, just as much as a personal development. you know, the elements of the caliber of my friendships and my relationships, the people that I spend time with. I'm always trying to hang out with people, like I said, that are higher than me. If you hang out with chickens, you become a chicken. If you hang out with eagles, you become an eagle. I have made a choice to embrace my humility and vulnerability. I believe that when you show yourself vulnerable, you give others permission to do the same, which is why I'm so open with my story. Other people, I'm not afraid anymore. If you want to say, oh, well, that guy's got all those issues, that makes him weak. Well, that's not my prerogative. That's your false narrative. And if you want to think that, totally, totally run with it. Live your dream. But I'm telling you, it's not going to pay off for you. So I'm not, you know, influenced by that. I live by my values and my principles, and I lean forward into this. You know, some of the other things I've done in the past is I've journaled and I've told my story so that I can go back and reread it and see the false narratives I'm giving myself or the stories that I'm telling myself that just simply aren't true. At the same time, it helps me get victory because I remember where I was during that circumstance. And I can say, now look where I've come. Look what the Lord has done. You know, another thing is understanding kind of like the difference between pain and pleasure. The things that we seek are going to give us pleasure. Like I said, the sexy stuff. You know, we seek things that we think are going to give us pleasure, whether it be sex, whether it be money, whether it be what is the gold glory in the girls, right? None of that stuff satisfies, and ultimately those things actually bring us the opposite. We seek pain and we end up, or excuse me, we seek pleasure, we end up with pain. And then the things that we think are going to be painful, the paradox of it is this, that actually makes us powerful and brings us pleasure. So I don't want to get up and exercise because that's going to, oh man, it's so much effort and so much work and it's time and it hurts my muscles and oh, blah, 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 blah. And yet you start getting healthy and you start getting in shape. All of a sudden your mind thinks clearly, your body seems more active, you're more happy and content and you can play with your kids without feeling like you're going to fall off your face because you're completely uncoordinated and being a, you know, a gelatinous lard. Like, pain and pleasure, we get mixed up all the time. But if you'll put in the things that seem at first painful, reading books and exposing yourself to growth and going to conferences that are outside of your comfort zone and talking to people that intimidate you, exposing yourself to those things will challenge you to grow. And nothing grows without a challenge. Grass pushes through concrete and soil. Trees push through the weather and the elements. A butterfly has to break through its chrysalis. Like, everything that's challenge, opportunity, therein lies. Dealing with your shame. Understanding that your shame, that is a story you are telling yourself. When you start carrying shame, something is wrong. Shame is you misidentifying the truth. Shame is a place of self-punishment that makes you victim to not actually accepting the opportunity to grow. It is that victim mentality that says, I'm going to embrace shame because that's my excuse, so I don't have to get better. And then you have to forgive. Forgive yourself. Forgive those around you. Any of the resentment that you hold amongst things I have done. And then lastly, understand the importance of your heart in all of this. In the same way that you're protecting your heart from, you know, those media stuff, you also protect your heart from yourself, that negative thinking, from those bad friends, from, you know, anything else that's going to make you feel worse about yourself. Like I always say, ask yourself this: how will this affect my heart? It's not, is this right? Is this wrong? Like, I don't believe in that moral virtue as much as I believe in how will this affect my heart? And if you take these steps here and you can list them all out, man, you will have a transformation in a way that you've never, ever thought possible.
Well, Angus, listening to your story today, and then when we met a few weeks ago, it's very clear that God has taken you from a place of deep despair. It reminds me of Psalm 40, you know, where it says, I waited for the Lord and I cried out to him and he lifted me out of the pit. And now I sing to him a new song, you know, and I'm not quoting it exactly, but it's that process where God took you to the pit where you felt the deepest pain. And from that pain, he's been rebuilding you and telling a new story that is to his glory, as you've described. So I love it. We are running out of time, but I know you've told the story in your book called Love's Compass. Mm-hmm. Where can guys learn about your book, your story, and the things that you write and talk about?
Well, you can get the book on Amazon. Just jump on Amazon and you can get the book there. As far as anything about me, you can go to angusnilsson.com. As we were saying before, I'm helping, you know, business people, creative business people, entrepreneurs specifically, get out of their own way and deal with these fears, deal with the things that are holding you back, and actually helping them build a business. Taking those things that you've always done, reverse engineering the things that come easy to you, then turning them into products you can sell and make money with. Everyone has a side hustle, it seems. And I help people turn those side hustles into stuff that actually becomes profitable and makes dreams possible.
Give us a quick example of someone that you've helped in that way.
So I'm helping a gentleman right now who actually has been building up, an audience for the last 4 years, I believe, on Facebook. And he's a former pastor. He's retired now. And he posts all these great perspectives on faith that are based outside of legalism. He's really funny because it's like he tries to prod people into discovering their own legalism. And he's kind of built an audience and never done anything with it. And so he was telling me the other day, you know, hey, we want to, I would love to like build some kind of product or something. I was like, well, do you keep track of all the stuff that you posted on Facebook? He's like, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I got this little Word document and it's several pages long. I said, well, how many things do you have? And he's like, well, I got like 500 of them. I'm like, 500? I'm like, you don't need to build a product. You have a product. So I'm in the process of walking him through actually building a short funnel that actually introduces people to buy this ebook. So we're going to build out the ebook and actually turn this audience into wanting to purchase this collection of things he's already created. And that's the thing, is we always think we have to make something that's whiz bang, that has to be awesome, has to be excellent, has to be perfect. And the truth is, you don't. You have two audiences. You have one audience that loves what you do, how you do it, and because it's you. Or the second audience is they want to be you. Pick one of those two audiences and speak to them. Reverse engineer and do the products around the things that you're teaching and the things that you're telling people that they love, or the thing that you do that other people want. Reverse engineer how you got to where you are and build products like that.
Fantastic. Well, that gives us a quick snapshot of what you do, and you've already got me thinking I should talk to you about Man in the Pew. But I'll bet there's other guys listening here who would also love to learn more about what you're doing there. And guys, his story is, you've only got a small taste of it here today. So I definitely encourage you to check out his book, Love's Compass. You'll get more of the full story. He goes into a lot of places that many of us are not willing to explore in terms of the way that our culture and our upbringing has impacted the way we think about love. And therefore, it probably makes it hard for us to receive God's love. So, Angus, thanks for being on the show. This has been episode 40. So if you want to get the show notes, I'll have all the links, some of the pithy statements that Angus brought up here today. Mm-hmm. It'll be maninthepew.com/044. And with that, Angus, I told you we always like to close with prayer. So I'd like to ask you to pray first, and then I'll pray, and then we'll be done.
Absolutely. And I'm going to start our prayer with a piece of scripture that was the pivotal piece that kind of changed my life. And it's Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 through 30. And I read it in the Message version. It says, "Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." And God, that's our prayer. God, that we would learn to live freely and lightly. We make life far more complicated than it needs to be. And life in and of itself, especially with what is going on in our culture today, politically and terrorism and natural disaster and all these crazy things, they've always been. Life is not static. It is dynamic. Yet God, you said you are the same. God, you are the God that provides. You are the God that loves. You are the God that forgives. You are the God that empowers. God, open our eyes to see how much you love us, how much you're for us, how much you believe in us. And God, every time we question what is going on in our lives, remind us to ask, what does this make possible? Because God, in your word, you said, with you, all things are possible. God, shape our hearts, shape our minds, and bring them into congruence and symmetry with yours. And we thank you for it in Jesus' name.
Lord, I thank you for the work that you've done in Angus that is such a powerful story of transformation, of taking someone who has been in the pits of despair and now is enjoying walking in your light with increasing joy and with increasing power. It's evident that you are doing a powerful work in him. And I pray, Father, that you will bless the work that he does with creative businesses, but as well with the men that he has a chance to impact who are wanting to be dads who honor you. Pray blessing on his family. I pray for each of us, Lord, who've been listening here today, that something that has been said will linger in our minds, in our hearts, and it will change the way we think about the rest of today and tomorrow, and literally each day that you give us the rest of our lives. Father, may we become more like Jesus. Would you feed us with your word, with truth? May we make better choices about what we fill our minds and hearts with. Would we be more present with our wives and with our kids? Would you open doors of possibility through our work that we might be able to provide well and impact this world for your glory, we ask it, Jesus. Amen.
Amen.